Thank you, Kim.
All right.
Well, true confession time. I actually thought that this was going to be my last week until I actually looked at the calendar. So, since we ran through pretty quickly 5 through 9 last week, we're going to go a little bit more in depth with some of that tonight. Maybe touch on 10. So, a little bit of a reboot. But again, it's an honor and privilege and a pleasure to be with you all this evening. My name is Rob Sipple, and I'm a recovered alcoholic. So, truly by the grace of the loving God, the power that I found is the result of the program in the textbook, Alcoholics Anonymous, by the awakened members of the Sacred Fellowship that led me to and through this program and continue to guide me, and by the service that God leads me to and that I'm allowed and encouraged to participate in, and by a host of teachers in my life, I've been moved from that seemingly hopeless state of mind and body to that state that I experience today as recovered, free, able to consistently see the truth. Surely about the first drink, about the defective thinking that always precedes that first drink, and most importantly, able to consistently see the truth that of myself I am nothing without a power of God at work even through my life, and deepening and broadening that on an ongoing basis, I am doomed to repeat. However, when I do practice that on a daily basis, I can walk freely with my head held high and a little bit of dignity. Quick recap of what has brought us to this point so far. And as I said, we've been going through this in the way that I try to take a newcomer through this as rapidly and quickly as possible. To identify, first of all, what the problem is, that I lack power. Power choice, I have no power choice and control over the substance and over my thinking mind, and hence, therefore, over my life. I have no power over the booze because of an allergy. The body manifests as a phenomenon of craving. That once I put it in me, I want more, and I'm never satisfied with just the one in front of me. I always have to have the next. And that feeling is always intensified, never satisfied. And attached and coupled with that is an obsession of the mind. Unable to see the truth. I have a sick mind and is unable to see the truth that I can't drink safely because I'm so focused on what it does for me. And I don't see what it does to me. I don't see consequences. I see relief. You know, the easiest way that I can describe that to you is no matter, everyone else around me can see what's going wrong in my life. And I don't see these warning signs or anything. You know, there can be a whole line of red flags in front of me. And I say, oh my God, it's a parade. You know, just let me join in. You know, that's what's, you know, I cannot see the truth that I can't drink safely and because of the consequences that surely follow. And again, if that's all it was, perhaps with, you know, a therapeutic approach and watching my triggers and looking over my shoulder and all that other stuff that we hear about, it would be sufficient. But I have a malady of spirit, a malady blocked off from a power that can and will guide me, a power of God that can and will guide me. I think that I am in charge and I can run not only my show, but your show as well. And I end up in conflict with women's people. And as a result, I manifest a malady of more, never satisfied. I want anything on the outside to make me feel better on the inside. When I have it, it's good, but it's never good enough. Because it's never good enough, I always have to have more. And no matter what is in front of me, that's, you know, and that isn't God, it becomes my God. I lack power, choice, and control over the substance. I am doomed to repeat. Step one doesn't tell me I can or can't drink. It tells me I'm doomed to repeat that I will drink again. Lack of power is my problem, and what's my solution? Power. Step two. How and where am I to find that power? Well, that's exactly what this book tells me. That's what this book is all about. That's what it tells me it's all about. How do I, you know, go about that? I go through this process. I don't need to be a believer. I don't need to believe in God. I can be agnostic. I can be an atheist at first. I can make this approach at any level. But I have to be open-minded. Which means I have to put aside my current ideas, or at least examine them. Are they working or not? Do I believe or do I not believe? If I do believe and those, you know, what aspects of my belief, or perhaps a current faith, or perhaps current practices, are not working in my life, and or if I am agnostic or atheistic and do not believe, what is it that is am I somehow going to be able to put aside those ideas and come up with a new conception, no matter how inadequate it might be? And as I mentioned earlier in this process, the only place that I can be separated from God is in the thought that I'm separate from God. The only thought that separates me from God is the thought that I am separate from God. The problem centers in my mind. It's not in the bottle. It's not in the allergy of the body. If I can consistently see the truth, then I can walk freely. If I can't, then I'm doomed to repeat. So the problem is in my mind that I cannot see that, just as well as I'm blocked off from God because I think I am God. I don't always walk around telling you that, but my actions reflect that. Because I always want to run the show. And the first thing I have to do is to face that fact. Face the fact that I think I'm God, and I have to quit playing God. How am I going to be able to do that? Through the process of the actions that I take in steps 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9, which will bring about a change in my thinking sufficient to recover. A personality change, a spiritual awakening, or a spiritual experience. Doesn't matter rapidly or quickly, doesn't matter when God shows up, God shows up. More appropriately stated, when I'm open to the concept and the awareness of God at work in and through my life and the life of others, then it doesn't matter whether it happens rapidly or quickly. It is the dawning of the awareness within my spirit, which then will filter up into my mind and I begin to look at the world differently. So I make a decision. A decision, as I said earlier, is without action, stand out to nothing but fantasy. It's just a hallucination in my head. So if I make a decision that from here on out God is going to be the director, God is going to run the show, I have a new employer, then the next thing I have to do is to take action. And we went in depth about looking at what I needed to inventory. What is it that blocks me off from the sunlight of the Spirit? What is it that blocks me off from the access of being able to access God's power, God's love, God's knowledge, and God's way of life? And our book is very clear. It's what blocks me is all in my head, where the problem centers. What blocks me off from the power of God is my resentments, my separation from you and myself from you, the world and its people. I think that I am better than, or less than, or different than, or I have attached judgment to a relationship that I have with you, and things are not in sync as far as I'm concerned, and my reaction is to resent you, hold a grudge against you, be pissed off at you, whatever it takes. Why? As our book explained and we talked about, selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of my troubles. I'm driven by 100 forms of fear, self-seeking, self-pity, and self. And based upon all that selfishness, I make a decision based upon that self, which later put me in a position to be hurt. I take actions that at some point in the past have put me in a position because I acted out in some way, shape, or form toward you. You reacted, and then I took offense to that and hold a grudge because I keep playing it over and over and over in my head. So I look at my resentments. What also blocks me off from God? Fear. That deep, paralyzing factor in my life that keeps me blocked off from any being able to access, again, God's love, power, knowledge, and way of life. Because I'm either afraid of what I'm not going to get or what I'm going to lose. Fear keeps me absolutely blocked. It keeps me doing the things I shouldn't be doing and keeps me from doing the things that I should be doing. And I need to look at that, look at the fears, and see exactly how it is that I need to move beyond those fears. And then the harms that I've caused. And in the actions and those decisions that I've made and acted out on that, and those decisions that have had consequences because of those actions, and I've ended up harming people. Either sexually, in terms of the first inventory that we look at, or in any other fashion, that whether it be monetarily or emotionally or whatnot, that I have harmed individuals. And I got that all down on paper and looked at it in a simple accounting style inventory and marched our way across. Who do I resent? Who or what do I fear? Who or how have I harmed someone? What did they do to me? How did it affect me? What's my part in it? The fourth column in all of those inventories. And most importantly, and that's the simple part. It takes no time whatsoever. It takes a couple hours to get all that stuff down on paper. But most importantly, where does the change begin to take place in my heart? This hardened heart that needed to be softened. And the only way that I have found and was able to be softened was through prayer, accessing God's power. And whether I believe it or not, I got to give it a try. My third step decision sometimes is as basic as, what do I have to lose? What it'll turn out to be is, how much do I have to gain? But I can walk in with that negative attitude of, well, what do I have to lose? We'll give it a try. And I discover, you know, I'm back into this sometimes. And yet I discover this whole new world. But prayer is what allows me to begin to see the truth about my thinking mind. I can't see the truth with my own thinking mind. I need the power of God at work to open up my heart so I can begin to intuitively sense my part in this. Some of it's obvious. When I put it down on paper, some of it becomes very simple and very, you know, real about, you know, in harms, a lot of the fourth column was, oh, I shouldn't have done that. I just should not have done that, you know. Which then leads me to, why did I do that? And then I can begin to look, you know, more in depth at that. Because ultimately it's going to take me to, again, what this book tells me. All actions on the conscious level are preceded by thought, so my defective thinking is what actually is causing, putting me in a position to be heard. Where I'm selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, frightened, and inconsiderate. Those basic defects of my thinking mind, those basic shortcomings, where I'm selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, frightened, and inconsiderate, all give me permission at some point to take actions that may have put me in a position to be heard. If I hadn't been so selfish and dishonest, I wouldn't have taken the action that I did in column four that would have later, you know, aggravated the person to have lashed out at me in the first place, or in the second place, actually. And so we get this all down on paper, and then I continue to pray, not just that I be able to see the truth about my defective thinking mind, but I begin to pray for these individuals that are on my inventory. I pray for their health, their happiness, everything I want for myself to be given to them. I pray that I change my attitude toward them, that God change my attitude toward them, that I soften my heart and I begin to look upon them as broken individuals, as just another child of God, imperfect in their own fashion, in their own path. And dear God, help me begin to look upon them as a brother or a sister, as another child of God, who I need to walk arm in arm with, or at least side by side with, or at least with compassion toward. And open my heart toward them. And help me to learn to be, you know, to begin to forgive them for whatever they have done to me. And to begin to ask God also to forgive me for my actions. And this process of prayer through inventory continues onward as I move into the fifth step. And I share this with an individual who has walked this path before, who can you know, guide me and see what I cannot see for my own self. I have the blinders of self on and unable to see the truth about I can only see from a selfish and self-centered point of view a limited truth about myself. I need someone who can look at me from the outside, objectively, or as objectively as possible, and help me to see more truth about myself. More truth. I'm not going to say absolute truth, but more truth about myself. And so I share about the resentments, the qualms, the fears, and then I open myself up to allow them to show me, tell me, talk to me, and allow me to see more truth about myself. We spend an hour in quiet contemplation and meditation, reflecting back on the first five proposals, Am I complete with my conception? Do I have any idea that I might someday be immune from the algae in the body? No. Do I concede to my innermost self that I lack power, choice, and control over the substance? Do I believe, or am I at least at this point willing to believe, that there is a power that can and will guide me? That power that we call God in step three, and am I willing to, go forward with the rest of this process to allow God from here on out to run the show? That God is now going to direct my life. Am I at least willing to concede that I lack, that I've been living all of my life under the illusion of control, and it hasn't worked? Maybe I should try something else. Maybe I should open myself up to the possibility that by surrendering this, I'm going to control it. That this anxious and tensioned, absolute command that I just run things better or faster or slower or just to get my own way. If I can give that up and just see where things go, this is the process that will allow me to move toward that and live a life that I never was able to live before. I share with someone, I'm complete. If nothing else has come up, I sit in quiet reflection, and then we turn the page to step 6 and 7. If we advance into our satisfaction, we then look at step 6. I've explained, we've emphasized willingness as being indispensable, and we now ready to let God remove from us all these things which are objectionable. Can he now take them all, every one? If we still cling to something, we will not let go. We ask God to help us be willing. And then, ready, we say something like this: my Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. We'll get to the rest of that in a moment. But I don't come to God, I don't grope for God by what I do right. I come to God, I grope toward God by what I do wrong. It is in my woundedness, it's in my brokenness that I grope toward God. There's an old analogy or story that sinners grow closer to God more quickly, and they use the image of, we are all attached to God by string, and every time I sin or slight God, I cut the string, and God, in his yearning to heal, takes both ends of the string and ties it up, and then I sin again and he cuts it and he ties it up again, and every time he ties that knot and binds me back toward him, that string gets shorter and shorter and shorter. Now, I'm not saying, just go out and, be a complete, sinner. But, this is what draws me closer, in if I'm aware of it. If I am aware of it. Inventory, and the fifth step, that process of opening myself up, allows me to begin to finally be aware of how I have been separated from God. How I have been the one who has been separating myself from God. God has always been present. Bidden or bidden, God is always present. Bidden or bidden, God is always there yearning to heal. And then when I hit bottom, there's my foundation. That rock bottom, as we talk about, it becomes my foundation, that solid ground upon which I can then begin to build with this process, and I can begin to move toward the, an awakening, developing my relationship with God, my side of the relationship, the actions that I can take to access God's power, love, knowledge, and way of life. And so, knowing what has blocked me off from God and what has blocked me off from you, the world's people, is my selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, frightened, and inconsiderate, thinking, which has resulted in similar behavior and put me later in a position to be hurt. All actions on the conscious level are preceded by thought. So if my thinking is defective, my action's going to be defective, my life's going to be a wreck. And what happens is that every moment that I walk through this day, moment by moment by moment by moment, a thought can come to mind. And as I said last week, what I'm given is that precious moment before, when that thought comes to mind, and before I act on it. There is that moment of opportunity. The moment of opportunity for growth. The dishonest thought comes to mind. My old operating systems wouldn't examine it at all. Just like, oh, okay, that's how I think, and I would just act on it. And my life would be, you know, a dishonest mess or a selfish mess or whatever the case might be, whatever thought came to mind. But now being aware, and surely at the end of my hour of contemplation after the inventory, never was I more willing that God could remove my selfishness and my dishonesty or my inconsideration and whatnot. And never was I more aware of that, and so I would ask God. I was told to ask God throughout the day when that thought came to mind, before I immediately acted on it, to begin to ask God to remove it and begin to act in the opposite fashion. And that becomes sort of a technique that I can practice on an ongoing basis. Thought comes to mind. Is this an honest thought or a dishonest thought? Is it a selfish thought or a giving thought? Do I go forward with it or not? And it doesn't matter which one I go with. There's just another opportunity for me to learn. If I go with an honest thought, instead of a dishonest thought, I'm going to go down one path. If I continue to go with a dishonest path, then I just get to relearn the lesson again in a bigger fashion. Every opportunity, every moment by moment by moment, is every thought that comes to mind is an opportunity to grow in understanding and effectiveness with my thinking mind and in my relationship with God. Wow! To be aware of that is the beginning of a whole new life. The problem centers in my mind, but I don't have to be controlled by my mind, because another aspect of praying throughout this whole inventory process and beginning to ask God to remove and beginning to live in a prayerful way through the whole day is that I'm now aware, not just of my thinking mind. My thinking mind is what used to run the show. I'm now aware that there's more to this thing called me. And that still quiet voice, that innermost voice, that never shouts, it doesn't have to. But that is the intuitive sense that can and will guide me if I listen to it and follow it and can lead me down a better path. And when I try that out and I'm aware of it and I begin to get better results, I begin to move down that path. And even when I fall short, I'm also more aware of falling short. Okay, so I get to try it again. You know, there's the old Chinese proverb, fall down 7 times, get up 8 times. It's not in the falling down that I create, that's wrong. It's the not getting up. If I continue to fail and continue to get up and continue to try and learn from my mistakes, then little by little by little, my behavior will change over time, both from positive results and from a change in my thinking. Are you with me on this? Okay, good. When I begin to put this into practice on a daily basis, in and through the day, it actually becomes kind of fun. And like I said, it doesn't matter whether I succeed or fail in the given moment. It's, sometimes I would catch myself afterwards and say, oh, Seth, you're at it again. Come on, stop. And then the nightly review, you really blew it this time. And even that, I need to begin to not beat myself up so much, after a while. And so you don't hear so much anymore, but you know, you used to hear an awful lot in this fellowship, you know, wear your sobriety like a light garment, a light cloth, or like you know, and this is where I can begin to do that, just to see, okay, you're gonna, I'm a broken human being. I'm never going to be unwounded or innocent again. But what I can be is open to learning and open to growing, moment by moment by moment. So I go, you know, aware that God can and will do for me what I'm not able to do for myself, I also have to be able to do for myself what I am able to do, which is to begin to live a different way of life, begin to think differently, or at least begin to act differently when a destructive thought comes to mind. And I start that path with the seven-step prayer. My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. Again, I need to begin to move out of the judgment game, the attachment to outcome, the attachment to judgment, and just allow me to go through, you know, and live in my actions. The judgments are going to show up as in results anyway, but it's when I'm attached to the outcome beforehand that gets me, you know, that I think I know what's good, or I think I know what's bad, and I'm walking in with already, you know, with the outcome determined, that I get myself in trouble. Okay, God, remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness. How can I be useful? Again, it's later on, it's, you know, in the inventory I was supposed to come up with, you know, what is a, you know, what is my role that God would have me be? Later on, we're going to, you know, look at what is the vision of God's will for me in all of my, you know, in it for the day. All right, how can I be useful? And where are my shortcomings currently keeping me from being useful? Oh, so again, even these defects are not something that I need to run from, or think that I can change. I'm powerless over these defects of where I'm selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, frightened, and inconsiderate. I cannot change them. God can remove them. God can alleviate them. But what I am able to do is to begin to try and act differently. There's my power. How can I be useful? Take away those defects so that I can be useful, so to stand in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. And then, as we talked about last week, now it's time for even more action. Action and more action in terms of straightening out in the physical realm. I've begun to straighten out spiritually in steps 1, 2, and 3. I've begun to straighten out mentally in steps 4, 5, 6, and 7. And now I go out into the physical realm and straighten out with the world and its people in steps 8 and 9. I've been praying for these individuals all the way since once their name hit the paper on inventory. I've been praying for their health, their happiness. I pray that I go out to them in a forgiving spirit, that I look upon them as differently, as just children of God. I pray that I offer forgiveness, and that I pray in giving forgiveness. And as I said last week, forgiveness is a gift. It is not something that I can grant myself. It is beyond my ability to, you know, this whole idea, well, the first thing you have to do is forgive yourself. I cannot do that. That's beyond my ability. That's for the therapeutic realm. In the spiritual realm, I cannot grant myself forgiveness. God grants me forgiveness. And in the receiving of that forgiveness, I can open myself up to forgiving others. And in the forgiving others, I can receive forgiveness. And all of a sudden, there is that conduit of love that begins to flow back and forth of giving and receiving forgiveness. And it shows up in love's second name, which is mercy. And I go out to these individuals honestly, humbly, and aware of what I have done to them as far as I know, but not aware enough. So I go and I make arrangements to face these individuals, knowing that, again, I cannot be attached to outcome. My responsibility at this point, as it says up on the top of 77, is my real purpose is to fit myself to be of maximum service to God and the world and His people. And I can't be fit to, you know, I cannot be of service to God and the world and His people if I'm still ducking you when I see you in the supermarket. And if I'm still running from you, if you know, I still owe you money. I can't be of service to anybody or anything or any God if I'm not straightened out and clean, or at least in the process of trying to get straightened out in my soul. And the only way I can do that is to face, face these individuals that I've harmed, admit my fault, admit my wrongs, ask that, am I correct in how I've harmed them? Ask if there's any other way that I have harmed them that I'm not aware of. Listen to them. Actively listen to them. Intently listen to them. Listen not just to their words, but to how they react. Are they, have I harmed them in ways that they're just, you know, how can I say it? Have I harmed them in ways that is so deep that just certainly a mere apology is not sufficient. And certainly sorry has nothing to do with an event. Sorry. You know, the endless drunk lament of all those years of sorry. And I promise, and I promise, and I'll never, and I'll never, and I'll never, and you know, that falls on deaf ears. And sorry is just another attempt for me to manipulate you into getting over what I think is yourself. You know, listen, I feel bad for what I did, and you don't want me to feel bad, do you? So you know, just can't we just sort of forget all about this and get on with our lives? It's just another subtle attempt for me to try and manipulate and get out from facing the reality of what I really did. And what I did to them was harm them in ways that I'm not, you know, aware, you know. There were people that I was disloyal in relationships with. I destroyed their trust. I took trust away from them. I broke hearts. I stole money. And no matter what the effect was, you know, it had repercussions in their lives that I paid no attention to then, didn't care about then, and have to face now. And I get to face that now. So I need to listen to them. And I need to ask them, how can I correct that? And encourage them to be open and truthful and to demand as much as they need or want to be able to have that corrected. I have to open myself up to the possibility or the potential, you know, that's not even the right word, you know, to the necessity for me to, as best I can, correct what I have done. Knowing that so still going to fall short in so many ways. And in the process of seeking this amend, perhaps the most critical part is that I ask for their forgiveness. Forgiveness, as I said, something that I cannot give to myself. And it is in that seeking forgiveness that I open myself up to an even deeper level of powerlessness and humility. And humbling. And I also open them up to the possibility that they can move onward from the harms that I've caused, and that they can be free of my alcoholism, free from the bondage that I have kept them in, though these many days, weeks, months, or years, however long it may be. That's my responsibility to them, to open up to that possibility of healing. Not so much for myself, but for the healing for them, to be able to move on with their lives. That's what we get to do when I go out truthfully and honestly and humbly and in a forgiving spirit. And as it and as I mentioned last week, I believe I mentioned last week, if not, I certainly should have. You know, it's like we have any times or meetings of this fellowship close with the words of the carpenter's son, when he exhorts us to, and we ask that I be forgiven my trespasses just to the extent, or to the extent, that I forgive those who trespass against me. There is where that real miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous occurs, in the healing of broken hearts on disparate sides of a harm. And what happens is those people I become more aware of. They always have been. Now I become more aware of them as my teachers as well. Every single person that I've harmed, every single person on that amends list has become a teacher in my life, an opportunity for me to grow in understanding and effectiveness with another human being, another child of God, another God walking on this planet with me, another manifestation of God. And our book is real clear and gives some wonderful examples of how to make amends if others are involved. Harms and amends that need to be made in the family, monetary amends. It gives us, you know, very clear cut, as always, precise in instructions. And it talks about, in the domestic area, if there's been no complications, no such complications, there's plenty I should do at home. Sometimes we hear an alcoholic say that the only thing he needs to do is to keep sober. Earlier on in our literature, it told me very clearly that elimination of my drinking is but a beginning. A much greater demonstration of my, much greater demonstration lies in my respective homes, occupations, and affairs. I have to live this thing. I can't just, you know, talk this game. And by this point, this has nothing to do with drinking and everything to do with about, you know, living differently and living right, you know, correctly. Sometimes we hear an alcoholic say that the only thing he needs to do is to keep sober. Sure, I have to keep sober, for there will be no home if I don't. But I'm a long way from making good to the wife or parents for whom years I have so shockingly treated. Passing all understanding is the patience of mothers and wives we've had for, who have had for alcoholics. Had this not been so, many of us would have no homes today, or would perhaps be dead. And it's not just wives and mothers or parents or fathers or, you know, other extended siblings, but the patience and tolerance that has been shown upon me, you know, by employers and friends and lovers and ex-lovers and even, you know, the judicial system and whatever the case might be. All of these people who were doing their best and trying their best to help me when I was beyond help, and I so shockingly and poorly treated them that I needed to go out and straighten that out completely, as best I can. When I say completely, you know, I didn't avoid seeing anyone. There are some regrets in that I didn't see people quickly enough. And some people in my life ended up dying. And that's on me. That is an amend that cannot be complete because of my delay. And that's on me. That's my responsibility. This book tells me over and over and over again that I have to, at once, next, immediately. There are time commands throughout this book, and you know, next we need more action. It doesn't tell me to postpone or delay, except when to do so with injure them or others. And here's a situation where I thought that I was in a position where I couldn't make an amend, and I still thought that I knew best. Did I talk about Kim last week and the dogs? Okay. I got a phone call from my mother one day, and we had a mother-son conversation, blah, 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 and on and on. And toward the end of the conversation, she said, "Oh, by the way, I got a phone call from a woman, and she's trying to get a hold of you." And I said, "Oh, really?" And she said, "Yes, her name is Kim." And she said, "Would you like the phone number?" I said, "No, I have it." So Kim was a woman that I was involved with, both on a personal and a professional level, and it didn't end well. It never did. It didn't end well. It ended with one of those finger in the face, "And I don't ever, ever, and I mean ever, ever want to see you ever again." So when it came time for amends, I'm thinking, well, she doesn't ever want to see me again. Can't go making that one. Yeah, and guess we'll just have to keep that one on the back burner. And her, yet her name kept, you know, at one point her name just kept coming up in on the radar in meditation, you know, every morning. And that swatted away. Oh, can't do that one. You know, her name would show back up again. And so then, you know, God does the old end run and contacts my mother and has her deliver the message. You know, so I call Kim up, and we had a boarding stable together, and we also raised German Shorthairs together. And the situation at the boarding stable had changed, and some things had happened, and so she had to get the dogs off the property. And she'd been asking everybody that she knew if she could, you know, if they could take care of them for a while and whatnot. And I was, you know, I mean, I loved them as much as she did. But, and so she was reaching out to me in desperation, hoping against hope that, you know, maybe something might have changed. Well, as it had happened, not only had I been sober for a while, but I had also just recently rented a house that happened to have like 70 wooded acres behind it. And so when she called up, in the book it sometimes says, sometimes years of misunderstanding fall by the wayside in a matter of moments, a matter of minutes. In the conversation, you know, I was able to explain to her that I was living a different way of life, and which she had always wanted in the first place, and that I had a place. And so I was able to, you know, bring the dogs in, and so I was able to keep the dogs for her until she could find a, you know, different stable and you know, change the whole situation. She could, you know, get the dogs back. But you know, for 6 or 8 months I had them, and yet here I was thinking that I knew best and I can't make this amend. And if I had done that, if I still thought that I was going to be the one who was going to be in charge of this, making the decision of whether to make this amend or not, I would not have, you know, been able to be there for her and the dogs, and we've, you know, since remained in contact, and you know, I'm still there every time she takes, you know, one of the guys, you know, to the vet visit for the last time, you know, so none of that would ever have happened if I thought I knew best. I always have to be open when that thought comes to mind, not to swat it away in meditation. This is, again, this is where I think, what'd you tell me, step three? God has to run the show, not me. And this similar situations like that have always opened up. And what I think is a tiny, small, little road that I can't go down. And when I do go down, it always opens up into a big, broad, wide highway that I could never have imagined when I get out of the way. Yes, I was like that alcoholic who was always the tornado, roaring my life through my way through the lives of others. I broke hearts. Relationships were dead. I uprooted affections. Selfish and inconsiderate habits that had kept everybody in turmoil. Sobriety was not enough. And I was the farmer who came up, I don't see anything the matter here, mind. Grand, the wind's not blowing. You know? Whew, the pressure's off. But the pressure, you know, isn't off spiritually until I go out and straighten out. And it tells me, yes, there's a long, long period of reconstruction. I have to live this life. I can't just, you know, walk. I have to walk this walk, not just talk this talk. A remorseful mumbling that I'm sorry won't fill the bill. No. And it tells me, asking each morning in meditation that my Creator show me the way of patience, tolerance, kindness, and love. Each morning. And we're going to talk about that next week in terms of 10. Each morning. Not when it's convenient. Doesn't have to be convenient. Doesn't matter. I made a decision that here and now God's going to be the director. And if He wants me to spend time in morning meditation, those are the rules. That's what I got to do. That's what I get to do. That's what I get to do each and every morning. Show me the way of patience, tolerance, kindness, and love. The spiritual life is not a theory. I get to live it today. That's what I get to do. I get to live this thing. If the spiritual life is just a theory, well, then I can just keep on going to meetings and just jabbering away about, you know, well, this is a great thing, but am I going to live it or not? The actions that I've taken in steps 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9, have taken me from a place of hopelessness and despair with just enough willingness to give this thing a shot. But this is, you know, pretty much was the state of my existence when I began this process. And it was as simple as what they tell me on page 52. I was having trouble with personal relationships. You betcha. I couldn't control my emotional nature. I was prey to misery and depression. Prey to misery and depression. I was a miserable, depressed SOB. I couldn't make a living. I had a feeling of uselessness. I was full of fear. You betcha. I was unhappy. I couldn't be of any real help to anybody, not even my own self. Yes, full of the devilness. And then as a result of the actions that I take, for self-examination, and for opening up in a truthful confession style to someone who can help me see more truth about myself in 5. And with that exact nature of my defective thinking and the awareness of that, I go out into 6 and 7 on a daily practice to begin to change that, the actions, and be more aware of my thinking mind. I straighten out the records of the past, and then I begin to get, again, results. The pages under those, that state of my existence on page 52 was nothing but self, 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 self. And here, I will be amazed before I am halfway through. I will begin to know a new freedom, yeah, a new happiness. I will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. The past now is not something I need to run from. It is just something that, again, I can learn from, be useful, and it's a useful tool that I can use as an example for others. I will know serenity. I'll be able to live a peaceful life. Wherever I end up on the scale would be benefit. This experience now is beneficial not just to me, but also to others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. I will lose interest in selfish things and I begin to gain interest in my fellows. Selfish and self-seeking will slip away. My whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave me. I will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle me. I will suddenly realize that God is doing for me. I will suddenly realize that God has always been doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. He is now and always will be doing for me what I cannot do for myself. But He will not do for me what I can do for myself, which is to continue to take these actions. What has happened from page 52 to up until page 84, when this is the way I begin to live? I'm awakened. I'm aware. I'm transformed. I've had a personality change sufficient to recover. I've had a change in my thinking sufficient to recover. I'm beginning to consistently be able to see the truth that I can't drink safely. That the drink problem isn't really the drink problem. That has been removed. And we'll go into that next week. But these are the results of what a spiritual experience, a spiritual awakening, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, it doesn't matter. When I'm aware, time is not a factor. I go from hopelessness to usefulness. Wow. Yeah. This is and the only thing I needed to do was some self-examination, get honest, get truthful, take a little bit of action. What's not to love about this? Thank you very much, and we'll open up to questions and general comments.
Thank you.